Two economic powerhouses, Germany and the U.S., plan a sit-down.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Global Perspective on Business and Economics. Treasury Secretary Jack Lew this week will be in Germany to meet with his counterpart, Wolfgang Schäuble. Things could start out a little testy. Late last year, the U.S. Treasury pointedly criticized Germany for putting too much emphasis on selling to the rest of Europe instead of buying more. The presumption is that this bias toward domestic consumption hurts the rest of Europe, but Germans were not in the mood to hear it. The BBC's Damian McGuinness joins us this morning from Berlin. Good morning.
Good morning, David.
Give us a little refresher about why these two countries have been on each other's nerves a little bit on economic policy.
When Jack Lew, the Treasury Secretary, a few months ago released extremely strong statements, the reaction here in Germany was quite simply outrage. A lot of Germans would think, well, why change just because other EU countries can't get their act together? But also, that was when the allegations that American security services had spied on the emails and phone calls of German citizens. So many commentators here in Germany interpreted these criticisms as almost revenge for some of the criticisms that had come from Germany towards the US.
And one presumes that America's Treasury Secretary will arrive in Germany full of charm and a sense of quiet diplomacy. But also the U.S. would like Germany to support a little bit more vigorously the idea of bringing Europe's banking system together. That's something else that the Germans are leery of.
Well, yes, that's right. I mean, on the one hand, Germany does want a banking union, but it wants a banking union on German terms. So to a certain extent, really, the criticisms from the states have so far fallen on deaf ears. So I think what we're going to see in 2014 is a slightly moderate version of what the previous government in Germany stood for. Exports are going to remain strong, but there's also going to be more of a focus on helping to boost domestic consumption, which is basically what Jack Lew wants.
Speaking from Berlin, the BBC's Damian McGuinness. Damian, thank you.
Thank you, David.
Now let's check the numbers. The FT 100 in London is down 2 scant points. The Hang Seng Index in Hong Kong rose less than 1%. The euro is up $1 to $1.36. The dollar is down to 104.6 Japanese yen. Stock index futures in the U.S. are up at the moment. If you want to get on the Concorde, you have to go to a museum these days. But private sector supersonic flight may not be completely dead. A company called Spike Aerospace is working on an $80 million private jet due in 2018 that promises to fly from New York to London in less than 4 hours. Sally Herships reports.
Corporate plane shame is gone. That's according to Doug Royce with aerospace research firm Forecast International.
Particularly the perception that as people were losing their jobs and as the economy was tanking, you shouldn't be out flying around in a business jet. That's gone away.
Roy says the market for private jets is worth tens of billions a year, but the lower end is still struggling. He says a signal the top of the market is growing is manufacturers like Bombardier and Gulfstream developing new aircraft. Robert Mann is an airline industry analyst.
The old adage goes, speed costs money. How fast can you afford to go?
Mann says pilots on private planes can pay twice as much for fuel as commercial airlines. Between taxes and the cost of shipping fuel to small airports, Fortune 500 firms are still the biggest business buyers of private jets. Arian, developer of another supersonic jet, says it has letters of intent for 50 aircraft. The check-in date is 2020. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
Want to see Marketplace live? You can enter to win a chance to join us at the Norse Theater in San Francisco on January 28th as we discuss the new era of philanthropy. Details and rules at marketplace.org/trip. There's a company based in San Francisco that helps Muslim investors around the world choose stocks and other investment vehicles based on which companies comply with Islamic teaching and which do not. Mohammed Donia is Chief Executive Officer of Ideal Ratings. Mr. Donia, good morning.
Good morning to you.
When you're vetting an investment, say a stock, to figure out if it is Sharia compliant, what are you looking for?
First of all, it's the typical social responsible investment. So you would screen for good companies, not interested in alcohol, gambling, even games. Then there is another level of leverage, interest, So I'll give you an example, like firearms. There are companies that are selling the firearms, so we'd look at if they're getting an income of less than 5% from firearms, typically these companies will pass. If the income level is more than 5%, then it is likely to fail.
And is there a sense that there's been a lot of money left on the table because there wasn't a way to get this information in the past?
I mean, the Islamic finance industry is estimated around $1.5 trillion, growing steadily at 25%. Most of that money is in cash accounts, not earning interest because the investors, they have the fear that they cannot invest the money. So when you provide a screened universe of companies, this would definitely help investors to start investing this kind of money and also leverage their investments across the different regions.
What about the idea of engagement of companies that you've evaluated? They might not quite pass the screens, but with some changes, perhaps could do a better job of what they do. Do you ever try that kind of engagement?
Absolutely. And we have a lot of companies that actually correspond with us and tell us, do we pass or what do we need to change? And sometimes they do these changes, and next quarter we will put them on our list, and your stock is going to see some good returns because there would be some institutions and fund managers and also retail investments coming to your stock.
Mohammed Donia, CEO of Ideal Ratings, based in San Francisco, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And when it comes to your investment portfolio, would you buy any company, no matter what it does, as long as it makes money? Many say no, and tomorrow we'll talk with Amy Dominey, another pioneer in this area of people applying their personal values to their investments. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.